I know New York is a great city, but yeah. I do not miss that lifestyle at all. I mean, it was just stress and blackberries and sleeping pills.
You know, you can really get trapped in that web of beepers and Zenith televisions and Walkmans and Discmans and floppy disks and zip drives, laser discs, answering machines, and Nintendo Power Glove.
Wow, you know so much about technology.
TBTL!
Well, hello. Good morning and welcome to a Thursday edition of TBTL.
That's a tuna, bro.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live, coming to you from Brooklyn as part of
New York City.
Here we are at Littlefield, everybody. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Oh, la la.
Very happy to be bringing you episode 3002 in a collector series. Yes. We are just racing right along to our 4,000th episode. It's right around the corner. Welcome, everybody, to the Alternative Comedy District of New York. You have the Garment District, you have the Meatpacking District, and right here we are in the Alternative Comedy District. Within a four-block radius of this theater, Littlefield, there are 33 other podcasts being recorded in front of live crowds. We are currently 33rd. But 33 with a bullet. We got our eye on spot 32, and we want to get there by the end of this episode. Thank you so much for being here. We have a lot of fun stuff in store for you.
Let the fun begin.
We have a good friend of the program and an all-around very smart person.
Intelligence for your life.
John Hodgman will be joining us. He has a new book out called Medallion Status, which I have been reading, and I have never felt more seen by a book in my life. I was like fist pumping on the JetBlue flight up here from Orlando. The people were like, is that guy okay? Is he a sky marshal that had too much to drink? No, I'm just reading John Hodgman's new book, Medallion Status, which is really good. We're going to talk to him. Plus, we have got some emails and V-mails, and we have this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for, well, among other things.
He may be best known for his depictions of the tall ships, capturing their grace and power.
He's back at it again. With the white vans, he is Andrew.
I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet.
Walsh. He's joining me right here.
Hello. Wait a second. I get to say something. It's just occurring to me now. I can say this the only time in my life. I can say, hello, New York. Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a good feeling.
Your new home is Brooklyn. Brooklyn.
Targets.
How is your budding love affair with Brooklyn going? We've been here about 24 hours now, and I know you caught feelings, which is problematic.
This is dangerous. I caught dangerous.
You're in a relationship with Seattle, and you guys have not talked about opening it up.
I know. I don't know. I will say this, and this is the truth. I feel like New York is America's best-kept secret. Like, yeah. Why is nobody talking about what an awesome city this is? It is so great. Have you guys been to Brooklyn before? It's awesome. And I'm not just saying that to be pandering. I didn't go on this in Orlando. Wait, why am I beating up on the Orlando people now? Yeah. No, Orlando was great, too. And like I call New York Little Orlando now.
Yeah.
I love this place, man. I don't know. Don't tell Seattle.
I would love it if there was a neighborhood of New York called Little Orlando. They would call it like Lordo.
Uh-huh.
Orlando. And it would be like a neighborhood nobody wanted to live in. And then people would start gentrifying. And
right,
be
right.
Like, oh, yeah. My God.
Ugh. There goes Lando.
It's exciting for me to be back here in Brooklyn. I used to live not too far from here in Park Slope. And I went on a little... Yeah, that's the right amount of cheering for Park Slope. I'm going to be honest. I lived there. It's a great place to have people of a different race raise your children in Prospect Park. As I noticed today on my jog, I was like, it's a very interesting parenting strategy I see on display here.
We're starting with the edgy humor.
That's right. This is New York, baby. I'm in the New York groove.
I'm just getting the notes on that now, too, by the way, audience.
So I chose... to raise my child the old-fashioned way, let the streets do it.
Right,
Andrew.
Right,
so
yes.
I can't really talk. But no, I love Brooklyn, and I did really like living in Park Slope, but I did have mixed feelings about it because the for me, the growing up in Seattle and like seeing New York depicted on television, all I wanted was to live in some sort of apartment that looked like the front stoop of the Cosby's place. Little did I know what a problematic sort of aspiration that would be related to Cliff. But at the time, I was like, I just want to live in a brownstone on a street of brownstones. And so I managed to do that. I jogged by that apartment today on 8th Street over kind of near Prospect Park. And it was interesting. I stopped. I looked at the apartment I had. I didn't start crying. Andrew,
oh, wow.
Which is rare for me. Yeah, thank you. Baby steps. I'm doing the work. That is a habit I have of going to old residences of mine and just sometimes staring at a tree and crying, sometimes staring at the front of the house and crying. I didn't do that, but I was marveling at one element of this apartment, because the reason that I was not cut out for life in New York is because everything is a fucking hassle. And like most things that are a fucking hassle, it's worth it in a lot of ways. This is a great city, but it's just work. Like, there was no air conditioning in the apartment. It was a walk-up. It was very hot. Addie and I went, and I bought air conditioning units at the P.F. Richard & Sons down on Atlantic. Richard Sin? P.F. Chang's & Son? I have to tell you, their selection of AC units was shockingly small.
Quick question for you here. How old is Addie around this time?
Probably like 11, 12.
Okay.
So we go to, what is it, P.F. Richard, P.C. Richardson's? Yeah. We'd like to welcome new sponsor, PC Richard and Sons, to the store. We went to a Best Buy, and Brooklyn's Best Buy or whatever, and we bought these air conditioning units, but because it's New York and we didn't have a car, this was pre-rideshare days, we couldn't get them from the place to where the apartment was, and there was these Rasta dudes with a van, which wasn't their company name. They were literally Rasta dudes with a van in the parking lot. And they were like, yeah, you know, we'll take them over for you. So we got in the van with them and we rode. They were cool dudes. They helped us carry the stuff upstairs. Got it all unboxed. And like, I put the air conditioning unit, which was super heavy, in the window. And I was just like, over 100% of New York deaths are from air conditioning units falling and killing people. I don't want to be creating a statistic. So I screwed down the air conditioning unit into the windowsill.
Okay.
Which I don't think was strictly kosher based on the lease, but I was like, I'm going to do it. Uh-huh. And I got the other one set up and I cooled the house down. It was like, I finally got it just like how I wanted it. It was like, this is my oasis in New York. I can have this apartment. It can be temperature regulated. And then 2 weeks later, I was coming out of a Bed Bath & Beyond with a bunch of stuff. And it was like 1,000 degrees and it just broke me. And I was like, I can't live here anymore. So I moved back to Seattle. I left the air conditioning units in the apartment, in the windowsill, because I didn't know how to get them back to PC Richard & Sons. I couldn't find the Rasta guys. I was like, no one's going to be mad about $1,000 of free air conditioning units that have been lovingly screwed into the windowsill. But I was very touched today that as I stared at that apartment, they were still in the window and they had not fallen out. So you're welcome, whoever lives at 548th Street, Unit 3.
Were you tempted to knock on the door and just be like, I just want to see my old units?
Honestly, there was somebody working on the kind of garden, I don't know what you'd call it, but the ground level. And he was a worker guy, and I was staring at the building, and he came over kind of like, can I help you with something? And I was just like, I don't even want to bore this guy with the details
of
how.
So you just wiped a single tear away and said, no,
I told
sir,
you I wasn't crying.
I'll be fine.
Yeah. This is going to be a very fun show. We're very excited to be here, but it's also pressure-packed for us, Andrew, because you were sharing with me a dazzling detail, which is that a listener who we believe is actually here with us
That's right.
has made what you could only call the ultimate sacrifice. Mm-hmm. He killed a person.
Yes.
And
a
child. He's on parole, and he chose to come here. Somebody has made the second ultimate sacrifice, right? What's going on with this?
All right, so this is from listener Joseph from Queens. Any reaction from the audience on that one? Can I read this email? Do you mind if I read it in full?
Yeah, I want you to.
This is what Joseph said. In honor of the back-to-school season, the producers of the magical 5-hour Broadway epic Harry Potter and the Cursed Child gave away 934 free tickets to the show. The numbers are referenced to platform 9 3/4, where young witches and wizards board the train to Hogwarts.
I'm sure none of these people are familiar with any of the stuff you're talking about.
Okay, can I pause for 1 second? I was loading this email onto my computer, which I know that's not how computers work. Just let that sentence, just let it go, okay? I'm going to cut it out anyway.
Do you want me to electronic message Windows help?
Yes. I can't believe I went on like a 4-month tear of making fun of Stephen King's inability to write or about technology. What? Just download the photos and I'll print them out. That actually makes more sense than what I just said. Anyway, I was kind of like, I got this email and I was prepping it. I was editing it a little bit. And I was in a restaurant today and I know nothing about the Harry Potter universe. And so I had to ask the waitress, like, is it platform 934? Is it 993/4? And she explained it to me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to turn the audience on us early there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I didn't tip her. Anyway, okay.
That's classic Slytherin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I took a shot there. No? Cameron, no?
Okay, so back to Joseph. I love Harry Potter. I love Broadway theater. And I have a boss who would let me take a vacation day so I could see Harry Potter if I won these tickets. So I searched for a Wednesday during which I could go. I was quick and lucky enough to get the free tickets for October 2nd. I was excited to spend an evening in the magical wizarding world of Harry Potter. I couldn't believe my luck. Then I checked the calendar, and I saw that the TBTL 3000th episode in Brooklyn was the same night. So I canceled the Harry Potter ticket.
Oh, my God.
I then checked on some other dates, but by then it was too late, and all of the 934 free tickets had been snatched up. In short, I am really sincerely excited to see you guys. Even though I love Broadway theater and Harry Potter, I will choose TBTL, and I would choose it every time.
Wow. I think I speak for, well, at least myself and you, Andrew, when I ask listener Joseph.
What are you doing here?
Like, why would you?
So Joseph says, as magical as Harry Potter is, it is performed 4 times every week. A TBTL episode tour show in Brooklyn is literally once in a lifetime, so please don't feel any pressure at all to be more entertaining than a universally acclaimed, visually astonishing, mind-bogglingly magical, 6-time Tony Award-winning theatrical epic. Very best, listener Joseph in Queens.
Did he come? Did he actually? Joseph,
hi, Joseph.
Where are you?
Joseph, in here?
Can you come up here for
Get
a quick
here.
Second? Someone's asking from the audience, do you have a Harry Potter tattoo?
No.
No. He's not crazy, you guys. Would you consider a TBTL tattoo? Okay. We're about, I don't know, 13 or so minutes into the show, Joseph. How are you feeling about your decision so far?
I've made the right choice.
Wow, really? Did you, like, I mean, that's a tough call. You sort of laid it out in the email, but I mean, did you sort of agonize over this decision at all?
I really didn't. No, it was very, very, very easy decision.
Okay.
So what was it actually? Your email said something like there was a daytime component and an evening component, right?
Okay. So the show is broken up into 2 parts. You can either watch it all in one day, or you can go on one day followed by another.
It's like the Ring cycle? Mm.
Yes. So it's like 6 hours of theater.
Oh, okay, by the way, Joseph.
You know, you got to eat that microphone.
Hold that a little closer to your mouth.
All right.
You're holding it a little too much like Fred Durst fronting a Limp Bizkit concert.
I actually like that technique.
That's, I do. It's very cool looking, but it's the mic is moving away from your mouth too often. So are you going to get to see the show at some point?
Oh, I'm sure. I've seen it once before.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
The story sounded so much better.
Oh. Oh. Is there room up there on the cross for any of us to climb up?
I haven't seen this cast, though.
We really... Also, I feel like it was... There was almost zero chance of them bringing you up and making you part of the Harry Potter show, which is happening now. So you did make the right call. Joseph, because you have made almost the ultimate sacrifice to be here, even though it turns out you've already seen the Harry Potter thing one time, we would like to thank you by giving you a $100 gift card from Everlane.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes! That's true.
You get a card.
And that's it.
But I just say,
thank you.
It's not like when Oprah does it. Yeah. It's just Joe gets a card.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more TBTL in just a minute. Would you call this more of a groove or a groove?
This is a New York groove.
Welcome back to TBTL Live from Littlefield in Brooklyn. I'm Luke Burbank. That's Andrew Walsh. 3,002 episodes into this, and I'm still doing resets like it's an actual radio show. This is really pointless. We're very excited to have our special guest here, the pride of Brooklyn and Maine, I guess. Please welcome John Hodgman to the stage.
I'll hold this microphone.
Yes.
Hello.
John, welcome to the program.
It's such a pleasure to be here. I would like to pay honor to TBTL. It's longevity.
Thank you.
What I have learned, I also have longevity. I am 48 years old. I'm a terrible elderly person. And I've learned something about myself. As you get older, you learn something. And what I've learned is I am no longer capable of saying the word thousand TH.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I've been practicing it backstage. Yeah. I want to say congratulations on your three episode. And it's perhaps because it's such an astonishing milestone.
I think so.
And it's also perhaps because my brain is failing. I enjoy martinis a lot.
The problem
But I can't say thousandth anymore. I just did it. That's the only time you're ever going to hear me do it again. Now, go back and post and put a three in front of that. And
now,
fit that in. Well done.
Could you sing Despacito? Just, you know, the other problem is episode is a tough word after thousandth. Episode. You say thode.
Just hearing you say it made my tongue freeze.
We literally did a show that I believe we called. Was it our 2000th or our one? We literally called it the 2000th episode.
Yes.
Sure.
Because
there
we had just messed
made
up.
That said that, I believe. Yeah.
I'm gonna try to say it because it's such an incredible benchmark. Congratulations on your 3000th episode.
Thanks, John.
It's amazing.
What is also amazing is that the last time we were in Brooklyn, about 10 years ago...
37 years ago.
We do one episode a year.
That's right.
You were also on the show, which makes you one of the few repeat guests we've ever had.
Not only that, Luke Burbank, I was with you when this show was on the radio in Seattle.
Oh, yes!
You did not remember, Luke Burbank.
I was drinking a lot in those days. There was about a 8 to 10 year kind of fog for me that I'm only recently emerging
from.
But
I remember going in to a terrestrial radio station.
Yes.
In Seattle to plug some ancient tome that I wrote at that time. And they said, go talk to Luke Burbank. And I had such a delight talking to you. But I'm like, this show is called Too Beautiful to Live. It can't be on the real radio.
And it wasn't for long.
No.
And so
this is going
told nowhere.
Yeah.
And yet, though you were too beautiful to live, so you have lived all the same.
Yes, we've embraced
or
what
maybe
a
survive.
Idea it
we'll
is.
Say survive.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. You know, scratch like, something together.
Yeah, exactly. But it's an astonishing feat that you guys have pulled
we,
off.
We work for this semi-large media corporation now, American Public Media.
Sure.
And we have to do, they're a real company, so they do these kinds of endeavors to better the employee's experience. And we have this thing called Thrive that we have to do, which is a check-in with our bosses about if we're thriving or not. Mm-hmm. And the idea that this show could ever...
I'm so happy that I've worked for myself for 19 years.
What would you, just speaking of sort of sad corporate things that we have to do as part of our job, we also take this cybersecurity training.
Oh, okay.
Which is like just... It's pretty obvious stuff. One of them is...
Just so you know, my social security number is 031-662-065. Look it up. Say it on every live stage I can.
We used to...
438 12th Street, 1B, between 7th and 8th Avenues here in Park Slope, New York. Well, we're in Gowanus now.
We used to have a you're so old joke when I was a kid that you're so old, your social security number is 1.
Ah!
Kind of holds up.
That's a good one. I like
what
it.
Would you do, John Hodgman, having no formal... I think we're having a little bit of trouble with John's...
Okay, there we go.
Okay, yep, good. Having no formal workplace training like we've had about
sure.
cybersecurity, if you found a thumb drive in the parking lot of your company, would your response be, that seems dangerous, or would it be, this is actual audio from the quiz?
It's your lucky day. You just found a USB flash drive in the parking lot.
It's my lucky day.
Indeed it is.
Wait a minute. First of all, it's an audio quiz?
That's audio taken from a video, like an internet slideshow.
Oh, okay, because you can't read?
Yeah, no. True story.
How is it my lucky day? Yeah. Like, I get, well, you know what? American Public Media, I guess people are really happy when they come across a free thumb drive. Yeah.
It's your lucky day.
What would I do if I saw a free thumb drive?
Yeah, would you take it in and find the most sensitive computer you could find and jam it in there?
I would not stop for a second to even think about it. I don't care what's on that thumb drive. I have my own thumb drives. I'm sorry I'm thriving as an adult human being. Who can afford a $4.99 1 million gig thumb drive? I'm not going to pick it up out of the parking lot of a public radio station or whatever the hell you do.
That being said, I had never thought, John, about just the sort of Davy Rothbart Found Magazine implications of what could be on a thumb drive. Like, to me, it was sure. like I wouldn't take it into the work or use it, but I never thought there could be scandalous photos or shopping lists or I don't know.
Yeah, you could bring down a president with it.
Yeah.
But I'm still walking away.
Yeah.
I'm actually being serious. I am surprised that you guys, that doesn't trigger your curiosity. I have a really old computer at home that I've been meaning to recycle, and the other day I honestly thought to myself, I'm just going to keep this forever because if I ever do have a lucky day, like I'll just like take it off the internet and plug it into that old computer and see what I can find. Like, you don't have a curiosity about that?
No, not at all.
Really? I don't live a very interesting life. I like to see
what... What are you looking for?
Something titillating. I don't know. Something exciting.
You know there's the internet. I mean, if you want titillation...
There's nothing titillating on the internet, is there? Could you write down the web address of that website for me, please?
No, you're right. The internet is mostly audio cybersecurity quizzes.
Yes.
It's real dull.
Yeah.
I suppose you could find some dirt that could change the course of...
Wouldn't that be something?
...of history, but in the parking lot of American Public Media, I'm not thinking that's what you're
going to find. Probably not.
Yeah. John, your new book, Medallion Status, is wonderful.
Thank you very much.
I liked it so much, I tore the cover off of it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you to do.
As I said at the beginning of the show, we have a segment that we call Skyjinks, where we talk about, you know, things that happen on the airplane. Maybe I can... Let me see. I'll
sure.
find it here. I'll favor you with the song, John, because you may not be familiar, which is going to change your life.
Yeah. I've only ever listened to the three episodes I've been on, including...
Yeah, no, that's it. Three more than the... here's a...
Episode.
The real story... Hold on. You know what? Let me actually play the full...
That was quite a payoff.
You know what? We're going to cut... We're cutting all of that out. Do you have the full Skyjinks, Andrew?
Yeah, I think
Wait a minute. Guys, what? I have it on this thumb drive.
Oh my God, it's my lucky day.
Oh my goodness.
Lucky day.
So the backstory is when Andrew and I worked on a commercial radio station at the very same station, John, that you visited, yes. Low those many years ago. This was a daytime show. And we talked
that
about...
That made sense.
We talked about airline stuff so much that we created a little branded music for the segment called Skyjinx. Then what happened was the other host of the show, let's be honest, the real host, a guy named Dave Ross, who's known for his beautiful bass singing voice, took the song that Andrew had produced, took it to his home studio, sang up like a bass line harmony or whatever.
Sure.
And then gave us back on a thumb drive that version of the song.
And you just put it in your computer.
Yep. Okay, so Andrew.
I have the file called, because you want to know this, it's called Skyjinx Open Mix 2 with voice.wave. I just want to make sure everybody knows that's what it is. Here we go.
Wonderful.
Good afternoon, this is your captain speaking.
Captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign.
Flight 209er clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Oh, it's a big, pretty white plane with red stripes, curtains in the window, and wheels, and it looks like a big Tylenol.
Skyjinx.
Yeah, so that's the Skyjinx theme song.
Wow.
The point of me bringing that up is that
That was worth the setup.
I think so.
I heard that bass in there.
Didn't
you? Elvira.
It was honestly, it did make it way better. Yeah. The reason I bring that up is because we even in this version of TBTL talk about air travel incessantly because I travel a lot for my various gigs.
Sure enough.
And one of the things I obsess over is mileage status and this and that. And this book, a big component of it is your... You're getting to a certain mileage status with an airline that you call beloved airline.
Right. I call them beloved airline in the book because Delta would not sponsor me. and yet a good portion of the book is like, it's about what happens when you have an unlikely career as a very famous minor television personality. And all of the secret rooms and exclusive parties and sky lounges that you were invited into with even the
sky
minors.
Lounge.
Yeah, right. Ooh.
God, we needed Dave Ross on that.
And then what happens when you start getting kicked out of those rooms one by one slowly, and you're no longer on television anymore, and you realize you're no longer as famous as even the least famous dog on Instagram. And then, as compensation, you start maniacally chasing diamond medallion status on Delta Airlines.
It is just ripped from the headlines of... It's basically my life minus the ever-being-famous part.
But you're, as I recall, you are an Alaska Airlines
I am
person.
A gold 75K, not to brag. And everything that you're writing about the lounges and the gamifying of it and the, like, what...
The sick, addictive video game that
the
it is.
The weird way that it makes you feel good when they come up in, like, on Alaska, though, thank you for being gold 75K.
Yeah.
It's so intoxicating.
It's incredibly, I can't explain to you what it felt like when I made gold medallion. I didn't know. And someone at the gate said, thank you for being gold. I didn't know that was coming at all. Like it's one thing to be treated like a human being by a major corporation and a notoriously soulless institution, which is air travel, but to be thanked for being gold. Like I was like, everyone feels like I always thought I was gold, but I wasn't sure. I always thought maybe I was tricking myself into thinking I was gold, and someone was going to look at me and go, "You're not gold. Get out of here." But now I'm getting on this plane. Thank you for being gold. It's a very powerful thing to be seen.
Yeah.
And we don't get to be seen a lot. I mean, even within our own families, people don't recognize us for who we are inside a lot of the time. And so it is devious in the extreme for an airline to weaponize praise in that way.
I know what it's like. I can identify with not being seen because I sort of assumed I would at least be mentioned in the book. And here's why. Here's why.
You're why I mean, not to give it away, the ending away, but you're why I got to go diamond. That's how I got from platinum medallion status to diamond medallion status, was flying out to do an interview with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait, so am I mentioned in the end of the book? I haven't gotten quite to the end.
Have you not read to the end of the book?
I haven't. I just started. I got the book like 2 days ago.
Oh, okay. I feel like... Hang on.
John is picking up the book.
Because you accused me of not naming you in the book.
Yes.
And I t- took that at face value.
You assumed he's now.
I didn't name,
is now leafing through his own book to try to see if he can find my name.
Well, you must have found
Luke Burbank.
I have to say, it's quite good. Oh, look, here it is. Page 259. Before I flew out, Luke Burbank, the host of the show.
Oh, no! John. Did you drink that Diet Coke I gave you backstage?
No, but I ate the rest of your burritos.
No!
There's a term going around, not as recently as, not so very recently, to describe the Democrats in Congress as learned helplessness. And when you said, I, when you accused me of not naming you in the book, I'm like, well, I guess you're right. I guess I don't deserve to be Speaker of the House. But look at this.
Oh, my God. Well, that's what I get for not reading all the way to the end of the book before being mad at you.
Luke Burbank called me to ask what I wanted to talk about on the radio show. I realized I had no new jokes or stories to tell. Still true. I had no television projects to promote. I had nothing at all. I guess I'd like to talk about my frequent flyer program, I said. Luke said, oh, thank God. Me too. It's all I think about.
Wow.
You got quoted.
That's amazing. I'm so sorry, John.
That's fine.
I need to delete a tweet right now, actually.
To be fair, this is the advanced reader's copy. It's not
locked in yet.
Not too late to get it out of the final. Let me text my publisher so your grievance can be fresh.
To use a phrase I use all too often on the show, I have just hoisted myself by my own petard. You're going to take me out of the book to spite me, and I would deserve nothing less.
I never would, because you're a friend, and I appreciate what you do, and you're also here. So it's great.
Is that because I didn't want to shake your hand when you came out?
No,
I'm deleting a tweet I wrote about how I was going to confront John Hodgman on
stage. Is this true?
Yeah.
He's doing it. I'm watching him delete that tweet. It just went away.
No, let it run.
No, I don't want anyone to find out how wrong I was. Once you make it part of your brand to delete tweets, it's very liberating.
I'm just sitting here thinking, I can't believe I said 1,000th correctly, and I found your name in the book.
That was amazing, by the way.
I'm pretty.
There's nothing harder than trying to find something in a book. It's not like, you know, the longest book, but it's definitely got some pages to it.
That's a little shade. I got you. Yeah.
It gets the job done.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of,
I don't believe that page count is more important than substance. Okay. J.K. Rowling. No.
Wow.
It's only because you were talking about it earlier. I love her. I love Harry Potter. She follows me on Twitter. Don't cancel me from culture, please. It's the only thing I could think of. Where's Joseph? Did he go see that play finally?
He's still back there. He's waiting for another gift card.
I feel you, because I was going to see Rambo Last Blood tonight. But thank God you called.
I don't even want to get into that movie. I think is like every one of those movies that they released, they have to pander to a more sort of like
increasingly
xenophobic kind of hardcore. Not like if you go back and watch the original, I'm sure it wasn't like a.
Why did we get on this? I know, it's my fault.
We'll cut all this out, don't worry. Can we stop down?
Yeah.
That's the other big thing that happened.
Good idea. Reintroduce me. Let's start.
Ladies and gentlemen, John Hodgman.
Hey,
John, I was so touched the way you wrote me into your book. That was, I did not expect it.
Well, how could I not?
Yeah. I really felt seen by you when I was on page 267 of your new book, Medallion Status.
Thank you very much. Available for order now, bit.ly/medallionstatus, bit.ly/medallionstatus, all one word, all capital letters, hashtag always be plugging. I'm John Hodgman.
That was good acting, but you write in the book about how you don't have a lot of formal training in it. You were on The Daily Show. You were on TV in commercials. People were like, I guess he can act. They started putting you in things. You're great in the things I've seen you in. I loved you in The Nick.
Thank you. Thank you for... Yes, I played a wide variety of mustache creeps in various prestige cable dramas and comedies. Including the Nick, in which I played a devious turn-of-the-century psychiatrist who pulled the teeth out of his own children.
Oh, my God.
For sanitary reasons.
But you're...
But you're
You're actually in a piece of tape that
I'm not that person in the show. Those children that I mentioned off camera don't exist.
You're in a piece of tape that we play on the show all the time, a scene that you did in Flight of the Conchords.
Yes.
Where you're trying to explain to them basically how a musical greeting card works. Andrew, are you able to, can we just...
Yeah, I think I got it right.
Favor the radio listeners at home with this.
Do you want me to tell you what the file name is called, or should
yes.
I play it?
No, I would...
That's funky. I like that.
Thank you, yes. Yeah, that's a fun card.
Where does the music come from?
There's a small chip-in speaker set that goes into the back of the card.
Was it a CD?
No, it's more like a chip-in speaker set that we... it's very small, and it's about the size of your thumbnail, and we just put it right inside the back of the card.
Like headphones?
No, this is a computer chip that's devoted really to one function only, the playing of the song when we open the card, and then I guess you could say its second function is turning off at this point.
Like a Walkman?
No, it's not. Not like a Walkman at all.
John Hodgman, everybody. You're not being a mustachioed creep in that. You're
not
the voice
all.
Of reason.
That was back when I was a weird, round-faced man baby. And then I grew the mustache, and they were like, let's have that guy tie some people to train tracks.
When you do a scene like that, or when you did that scene, how is that all written? What you're saying, is that directly from the script? Are you guys improvising? It feels very... improv to me, but maybe
there was an element of improv, and it's hard for me to remember how much of it was improv. It's funny because I remember that filming that scene very, very distinctly, because that's an amazing show, and Rhys Darby and Jemaine Clement and the other guy.
Yeah, Brent.
Say his name. Britt. What's his last name?
Michaels. McKenzie.
So
Michaels McKenzie.
I remember shooting that scene so well, to be there with my castmates, Rhys Darby, Jemaine Clement, and Brett McKenzie. But what was strange about that scene is we were in this sort of anonymous office, and I was playing an executive in a greeting card company, and it was totally like anodyne, just office. But it was the office of the caretaker of, I think it was Greenwood Cemetery. Like, we're in the middle of this massive cemetery for some reason. And we're like, why are we shooting in this office? Like, this is the one we could get.
Wow.
could have been anything. But, yeah, no, I remember improvising a few lines, but I may be misremembering. I don't want to take credit for stuff, because that scene was written, after all. And those guys are so funny.
I don't think I would be able to, even on the 30th time, not laugh when whichever one is says, like a CD.
Yeah.
Like, I would break.
The beauty of the show, I mean, they would break all the time. It was so, I know, it's great, because they're so deadpan in the show, but they would just break out laughing all the time. And for me, who was coming in, as a tourist to the show, as just a guest star, and also very early in my on-camera career, which, let's face it, from the beginning was always implausible, to be there... and see that they were willing to break meant that I could feel comfortable and mess around a little bit too. So we went back and forth on that. It's a Walkman, it's a CD. That was written in, but my frustration with them was real.
One of the other things that you're known for is your
You know what? Thank you for that deep cut. That really that really took me back in time. I appreciate that.
It's airing on a TBTL episode about once every 4 months.
Yeah. Oh, hooray.
You'll get the residuals check.
I should listen to this thing.
One of the other things that folks love you for is your awesome podcast and column, Judge John Hodgman.
Thank you very much.
And we sort of put something together thematically along those lines. Andrew, care to illuminate?
Yeah. John, I'm usually kind of the quiz master on the show. I love putting together quizzes.
Sure.
I like to think I'm good at it. I don't say that about many things in life. But because of the Judge John Hodgman angle, I really wanted to put together a really cool quiz all about, I don't know, maybe judges' quotes or jurisprudence in some
please,
way.
Please.
But I kept...
No, thank you. All right. No. I don't know anything about the wall.
Well, we'll see. It's not my job to help you win.
No, true.
Wow.
Just remember that, by the way. We're not on a team
and Andrew,
here.
Okay?
Is Andrew on a page of this book? Because I feel like they could really rebuild your guys' relationship.
That'll be on the next
book. I usually only talk to gentlemen that I've written about. So.
Anyway, I'll be honest. I couldn't come up with anything. No. I was trying so hard. And then I'm like, maybe somebody online just has already done the work for me.
Oh, okay.
And it turns out they did.
Right.
And that person's name is Clutch Fluid.
Right.
At least online. And this comes from the website funtrivia.com. The quiz is called the Judge Dredd Quiz. You think you know all about Mega City's harshest lawman? We'll see.
All right.
Now, I did not realize...
By the way, the moment that you went to funtrivia.com, your whole system got hacked.
Yeah, I know. No, it was great. A bunch of other websites started popping up.
Yeah,
it was
free
amazing.
Websites.
You didn't even have to navigate to them. This is a Judge Dredd quiz.
Yes, which it turns out that is that in your wheelhouse because you're kind of a comic book guy.
I'm a nerd in good sense. I was just about to say that you know this is truly an episode of your show that is geared to a 48-year-old white man. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay,
that we're doing a Judge Dredd quiz.
All right, well let's see. I got to say,
how many people even know who Judge Dredd is?
I assume this is going to be
a solid 21%.
But I assume this is going to be about Sylvester Stallone playing Judge Dredd in the movie.
This is about the
Judge Dredd universe.
The Dreddiverse, the comic.
The Dreddiverse, right? Sure.
Judge Dredd is a vigilante character set in a dystopian future, where police officers are given the right to judge and execute criminals on site in a city called Mega City One, which is on the Eastern Seaboard, and it originally came out in the famous British science fiction comic 2000 AD. What's your first question, Andrew?
Yeah, look at those. That's it. That's the whole quiz. Can we go back to the idea that I had?
You just want an Everlane gift card.
Joe, give him your Everlane gift card. The idea that I had that we couldn't quite figure out how to make it not a negative was... a quiz called Judge John Hodgman. We would just judge you and your various decisions.
Idea.
We really spent hours
trying to make that work.
Where it didn't just turn into a roast.
Yes,
I would have welcomed that with open arms from both of you. Give me one question for your quiz.
Okay, number one. What is? Well, this is so silly. Now I didn't know you knew all that. What is Judge Dredd's Christian name? Do I even need to give you the options?
I don't know.
You don't know? Here are the options: Maddox, Hunter, Neo, or Joseph.
I'm gonna say Joseph.
It's Joseph, indeed.
Yeah. Give me another.
You are on a roll here. All right, who has the dubious honor of being the ugliest citizen of Mega City 1? Is it Otto Sump, Igor Klumkowski, Bub Stumpy, or Myrtle Groggins?
I'll say Myrtle Groggins.
You're going to say Myrtle Groggins? I'm afraid you are not correct, my friend. It's Otto Sump.
Sure.
Okay. Is Otto Sump here tonight? Okay.
No one's enjoying this. Keep going.
According to Wikipedia, Otto Sump was a notorious... Why, you're just undermining me this whole show, John, and I...
No, it's me. It's me because I'm not doing a good job.
No. Everybody's loving
Andrew,
it.
Andrew, I love you.
I
Stop
love you,
it.
Too. It's finally, we broke through.
Now I feel terrible.
No, I'm teasing. Otto Sump was a notoriously ugly man. This is according to Wikipedia, so don't say I didn't do my homework. He was so ugly that his parents abandoned him on the steps of a face-changing clinic. No? I don't know. Later in life, he was too ugly to be hired for any job other than rat scarer. Does any of that ring a bell?
No.
Okay.
Are you saying when he was born, his mom slapped the doctor?
Yes.
To be fair, I told you all of my Judge Dredd information.
Threw it all out there at the
beginning. And I did see the Sylvester Stallone movie.
I really thought this was going to just be a bunch of jokes about Sylvester Stallone.
No, Sylvester Stallone has nothing to do with this. This is pure dread before it was commodified. Question number three. Marlon Shakespeare, who appeared first as the graffiti artist known as King...
Uh-oh. Where are you going?
There's only 40 more questions.
Okay. I'll tap
in.
No,
you win. You win. Okay? You win.
Okay.
You are the law. You are the law.
Marlon Shakespeare, he appeared first.
I don't know the answer. Stop
but
it.
I'm going to give you some options. You're going to deduce.
All right.
He was known as King Skrull. Then, you know this, later he came back on as the Midnight Surfer, but he's better known by what name? Cutter, Cleaver, Chopper, or Trevor?
Chopper.
Chopper is indeed correct.
Ah!
Look at you. Look at you.
High note. High note.
Now you're back into it. Oh.
No. 37 more.
Rob Schneider was in the Sylvester Stallone movie.
Oh.
Well, see, these are the dazzling details I was hoping we would uncover.
And I was talking to someone earlier today, because I talk to other people, not just you. And this person was a member of the press, and they were saying, what was disorienting about going on television when you first did? And I realized that, there's a lot of disorientation about being on television and people seeing you. When you are known at all for writing a book, as I had done, or, doing some radio stories or whatever, people think of you as their friend, because radio and books are an intimate form, right? It's a one-on-one sort of thing, and you think, you're reading your friend's journal or you're listening to your friend speak in the other room. And when they see you, they're like, it's so nice to meet you. But when they see someone who's been on television, it's like, oh my God, that's a ghost. Like, there's an impossible person. That person was on a flat thing in my room and now he's walking down the street whistling. And for me, the first famous person that I saw in New York walking down the street whistling was Rob Schneider. And it was so, it was so overwhelming to my senses that I was seeing someone from television in real life, that now I have the affliction that the image of Rob Schneider whistling is burned into my brain. I can never forget that for the rest of my life. And I can only think of who I have personally traumatized in that way. When they have seen, they're trying to go about their day, and they're like, oh, there's a PC on the train? What?
Well, you write in the book about how you were in a town in Maine that you go to, and you were kind of freaking out because your car was having trouble, and you and your wife were having sharp words, and a very nice couple just walks up to you, and they're like, John Hodgman.
And I'm like, oh, I'm yelling at my wife right now, please. I can't talk to you because my car is bleeding to death. Weird liquids are coming out of car holes, and I don't know what to do. I don't know about cars, and I'm embarrassed because I was speaking sharply to my wife, who I love very much. It was our 20th anniversary on September 25th.
Hey, congratulations. Tell me when you get to 3,000 episodes.
But, I don't. I mostly do my podcast, Judge John Hodgman, and write my books, Medallion Status, October 15th.
Yes.
And I'm not on television that much anymore, so to be recognized in that way feels as a little bit, it's something that doesn't happen very much, and it's such a gift. As I was saying, it's like, to be recognized, to be seen, like, I can never be mad about it. Most people in the world go through life without being seen at all in much more important ways. So if a young couple with a baby comes up to me while I'm having a nervous breakdown because I still don't know what happened in the car.
Yeah.
The heater core dropped and engine coolant. It looked like blood and lymph was coming out of the car.
It bled out. Yeah. You just leave it there to bleed out.
Yeah. I turned it over and walked away.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, you have to gain composure and you turn to them and you say, thank you for liking what I do. Wait a minute. How did you find me in this unnamed coastal town in Maine? What are you going to do to me? Unfortunately, they did not invade my house because then I could have written that book and that would have been a bestseller.
Yeah, definitely. You're wearing a Brooklyn Americans hat, which yes. I'm going to guess based on your love of canceled hockey teams.
Yeah, I'm not a sports fan. There's only one sport I follow, and that's the sport of extinct hockey. there are many teams to follow. Mostly I'm interested in the logos of extinct hockey teams, the Hartford Whalers in particular. Designed by Peter Good, the designer in West Hartford. He's never designed a sports logo before or since, but he designed this beautiful 70s logo for the Hartford Whalers that uses negative space. Look, go look at it. And then I started to follow more extinct hockey teams because I realized that the thing I don't like about sports, and you might be a sports fan, a lot of it seems to be about winning.
Not if you're the Cleveland Browns.
Well, yeah. The emphasis on winning as a sickly asthmatic only child, the emphasis on winning never fascinated me. But the emphasis on but hockey is the minorest of the major league sports. They're all underdogs, right? And then extinct hockey is the saddest sport of all. they're all strivers who failed. So I'm a big fan of the Quebec Nordiques. I'm a big fan of the Atlanta Flames.
That somebody's just trying to fit in by cheering for that. There's no way that person is a Flames fan.
I like sports when the outcome is known and the outcome is sad, and that's why the Brooklyn Americans were previously known as the New York Americans. They were one of the original teams in the NHL. They played at Madison Square Garden. Built this gentleman, the TBTL hat is nodding along. You know what I'm talking about. They were owned by Bill Dwyer, a notorious bootlegger. But they had a weird deal. If Madison Square Garden ever fielded another hockey team, they would have to support it and get out of the way. Madison Square Garden put in the Rangers, the New York Americans, known as the Amerks, stupidly.
or geniusly.
Yeah. couldn't compete. They gave the team over to the NHL. Red Duggan was put in charge. He tried so hard to get them to win a game of hockey, but they could not win a game of hockey. And the last gasp, as World War II approached in 1941-42 season, he changed their name to the Brooklyn Americans, hoping that they could find an arena in Brooklyn, and Brooklyn said no. And they were known in their last year of existence as the Brooklyn Americans, but they never played in Brooklyn, and after that, they never existed again.
This has been interesting, John, but what is the final test that cadet judges must enter to become a fully-fledged judge? Is it the chicken gauntlet, the hamburger hard knocks, the hot dog run, or the banh mi baptism? More questions from Judge Dredd.
Hot dog run.
Indeed.
Absolutely right. Yeah. See?
Indeed it is. All right, just one more of these things. Who are Judge Dredd?
You have so much invested in this quiz. You didn't even write this quiz.
Up. Who are Judge Dredd's otherworldly immortal enemies? The Clegg?
Judge Death!
The Dark Judges? The Angel Gang? Or the Executive Branch?
Well, his immortal archenemy is Judge Death.
Is that a dark judge? Because that's
say
the
it's
answer.
A dark judge. All
right, it's probably a dark judge, yeah.
I'm going to give it to
that
you.
That I knew.
There you go. You got them all right.
That I
yes.
Knew.
Every single one. I mean, you got some wrong, but you made up for it with the hockey talk. So
yeah,
all,
hockey talk.
Yeah.
Way to hear about the Montreal Wanderers. Even sadder story.
Right. Really?
Yeah,
the name doesn't sound like it's going to be a happy story.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right. We're going to do a couple emails here, and then we're going to do a Q&A if you have any questions for us. John, can you stick around?
Yes.
You're sort of trapped. The music, the Doogie Howser music has started, which is nature's natural trap.
I'm thrilled to stay with you,
okay,
and answer no more questions about Judge Dredd.
If you have any Judge Dredd Q&A, by all means, fire it at John Hodgman. Andrew, what's the email situation looking
like? I have some emails, but let's see. Are there any questions from the audience first? I think that might be a little bit more interesting.
Okay.
We got somebody coming up over here. Okay.
Okay. There you go.
Here.
That microphone's a little janky.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm from Mukilteo, Washington.
She's the mayor of the town that she lives in.
I can't help the segment because I don't have a question, but I would like this opportunity to be the official time when I announce that October 10th will be Jackson, the Mukilteo 10 day of the year in Mukilteo.
What?
Wow.
I thought you were going to announce that you're running again, and I was like, I think this is an illegal campaign
ad.
Now
we got to do equal time.
Well, I'm not running for anything right now, but right. I have received campaign donations in the past from tens.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
They appreciate it.
Let me contextualize this for basically John Hodgman. We have a family that lives in Mukilteo where Jennifer, the mayor Gregerson, is from, and they have a son named Jackson, and he's a big fan of the show as well. And you've made it officially that kid day in your town.
Yeah, that's right. I expect to see him next Wednesday, like I did a year ago at Walktober Wednesday for his elementary school. I know that's weird in New York to say walking to school to celebrate it, but it's something to celebrate in our town, in the suburbs. So I saw him a year ago, and he was very excited. He said, "Do you listen to TBTL?" Like, yes.
Like you were at a school event.
Yeah. We were all gathered together to do a little walk to kind of, I don't know, they do it to say it's good to walk to school. So he approached me like a good 10 would and started a conversation. He went to the baseball game. He got to go to Orlando. I'm jealous of that. So.
Yeah, the kid is stalking me.
Yeah, I know.
He put us on blast about the Song of the Summer contest.
He did.
This kid is like really serious. And now he has a day in Mukilteo.
I can tell.
It's one of the few things I can do as mayor, so.
I can tell I'm very deep in the TBTL-iverse.
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah. You may never get out.
May I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
Forgive me, everyone. You're the mayor of a town?
Yeah, I am.
Where is the. First of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Ms. Mayor. First female mayor. Oh, congratulations. First woman mayor of Mukilteo.
Yep.
All right. And where is this town?
Just a little north of Seattle, about 20 miles
on the
water.
In Washington State.
In Washington
Across
State.
Across the country.
I went to college in New York at NYU.
No, that's fine.
So
but are you the current mayor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your town could be burning.
Mm hmm.
And you came to a podcast. Is there anyone left in charge?
No. Yeah, Jackson's in charge.
Yeah. I have a question. How long are you in town for? Are you staying till tomorrow? I'm not asking you out.
Gee, you only play a creep in TV shows.
I fly back on Friday so I can make it to the boat.
Oh, okay. So
we're doing a show on a boat on Friday. Yeah.
But if you're around tomorrow, if you would like to meet another Do Nothing mayor, go to the Park Slope YMCA.
Oh no.
Go to the Park Slope YMCA around the middle of the day when only podcasters and screenwriters are on the treadmills, as well as the mayor of New York City. Bill de Blasio.
Run for president. So.
No,
I think honestly, Jennifer, the way de Blasio is polling, you could be the new mayor of New York.
Yeah.
If you just stay. Let Jackson run Mukilteo, you run New York City.
That's a good plan. I like it.
And declare it New York City Luke and Andrew Day.
Yeah.
I want that to be your first act as New York City mayor.
Okay.
I apologize for insinuating you were a do nothing mayor simply because you left your community behind.
I just have priorities.
To come to a podcast and follow a podcast around.
I got a phone. I got email.
Yeah, that's right. We're all telecommuters, right? Just like the mayor of New York.
Hey, if there's an earthquake, I'm better off here, so.
Well, it's very great to meet you, and
I wish you
the best.
Mayor Gregerson.
Mayor
that's
Gregerson.
Fine.
Come on up.
All right, come on
can
up.
Can you reach it?
Great.
Segwaying okay. on.
Okay, what is your name and where are you from?
I'm Susan. I'm from Shrub Oak, New York. Okay. I'm Ruby's mom.
Yeah.
You know me.
Do you know Ruby's mom? Do you know Ruby's friend?
Yes, I do. Hi.
That's great.
So,
can I ask a question? What happened to Ruby?
Ruby's in Seattle. She'll be on the
boat. Okay. All right.
She'll be on the boat, Friday.
I will mention that there is another show happening in this theater tonight after us. We have to be off the stage at 8:30.
Right.
So if there's any other socializing that you guys want to do, just go for it. We'll take the rest of the night off. Okay.
So You mentioned that basketball was starting up again, and I wondered if you have run into your nemesis.
Oh. I've met my nemesis, and my nemesis is me. And by that I mean, so I play sometimes at this YMCA in Bellingham where I live, and there's a guy there who I kind of had some words with at one point. I am currently not even in shape enough to play in the like over 50 men's YMCA league, at least by my standards. And so I need to get more in shape so I can go back to the YMCA so I can fight my nemesis.
Wow.
So I'll give you a full report on that when I actually get to that level.
Why is he your nemesis?
I think there's a real culture around these regular pickup basketball games. Yeah. And it's sort of a click. And I was so excited to find this morning basketball game. And I would like, because in my younger days, I used to play a ton of pickup basketball. And then I found it again years later. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I missed this so much. And I wanted to
I'm sorry to bore you guys with this story, which you obviously know. I mean, this goes.
They do.
Obviously,
believe
this goes back to like episode 1000 or something.
Yeah, I know. But basically, I came in hot. I was so excited. And I wanted to be like flipping people's shit and having fun and just being more. Kind of like a member
of the
community.
You're all like, you didn't name me in your book, dickhead. Fuck you.
Yep, that is.
Came in hot.
That's sort of my go-to insult. I've used it on Salman Rushdie.
Sure.
I've used it on John Irving.
Sure.
Okay.
It was weird when you took down Margaret Atwood with that one.
Yeah. Ooh.
Timing on that was rough.
Hey, we actually have, this is going to be airing this episode on a Thursday, which is typically our Blursday segment, but we felt like we've all come here to Brooklyn. We have John Hodgman, author of Medallion Status, with us. Let's not do that. But then, Andrew, what happened?
I wanted to play this.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way to roll. You can just listen to your soul. Just remember that life is number one. You can be having so much fun. Just remember that life is much fun. You can be number one.
Here it comes.
This is two different Tim Heidecker bass jams stitched together.
What is happening? Why did you ask me to stick around for this segment where I obviously would just be confused? This is just for all of you.
Yes.
I have nothing to offer. You know, but alternatively, it's like I went on the radio with you. I met you 10 years ago at another place. This could all just be a prank.
It is.
Like, let's pretend 3,000 episodes. That's impossible.
Yes.
This is a joke on me.
Yeah.
You're all in on it.
I'm Charlie from Improv
Let's all
Everywhere.
Pretend we know the same songs. Let's all pretend there's someone named Ruby that we're all friends with. And a mayor of a town. This is a show. You're filming me. This is a prank podcast.
We actually have one birthday that's very worth noting here, and it's listener Brian emailed us and said, hey, this is really rushed because I'm a terrible planner, but it's my wife's birthday today, and if it's not too much trouble, could you tell my beautiful wife happy birthday during the live episode? Her name is Lindsay, and we came all the way from Indiana to see the show live.
Yay!
So happy birthday, Lindsay, from Indiana.
Oh, hooray! Brian and his wife, these recurring characters that I've never heard of.
All right, any other questions from the audience before we wrap things up and get out of here? Okay, come on up and use the world's least reliable microphone.
Here, you can use mine. I have nothing to do here.
I think you have plenty to do here. My name is Emily. I live in Philadelphia.
Nice.
Originally from Portland, Oregon, that one.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm really curious. I am a doctor, one of those people that have a doctorate.
Thank you for your backstory. I know
thank
everyone
you.
Here knows it, but thank you for bringing me up to speed.
And I look into food and food practices And I'm curious about your diet.
Wow.
You're vegetarian / vegan.
/ burrito.
/ burrito diet. Yeah. And where the boundaries of vegetarianism is, particularly because this is part of my research.
Here we go.
Is
do you eat bugs?
Exactly.
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
Wow.
Would you consider eating insects?
I haven't. I have not given that as much thought as maybe I should have. I guess it would come down to what the research was on what their sort of cognition, if any, is, and what their awareness is. For instance, I would totally eat oysters.
Sure.
I actually read a very sort of strong defense of vegans eating oysters because oysters are almost more plant than animal. This is what this person was writing in Slate magazine, so we know it's legit.
Tom Oyster Farmer Smith.
Yes. I thought that was a weird name. So I would eat an oyster and I wouldn't feel particularly bad, but I wouldn't eat a salmon. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's just, and I'm not doing any of this in a very organized, as the listeners know, organized or thorough way. It's just kind of mostly emotional. And if it's something that I think would notice if it was living in a really terrible condition or that its death was painful, I just am going to try to not do that. But I tried to kind of do more vegan stuff as of like a couple weeks ago, and that has been a complete failure. So clearly I don't feel that bad for cows who have a sort of bad time. Now, let me ask you this about insects.
Yes.
What do insects know about what's going on?
So I look into the consumer behavior aspects of it. So the perceptions of what you're just talking about is a real thing. They don't feel any pain.
Do we know that for sure?
Yes, because I have been to the process.
She's tortured a lot of bugs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Starting at a very young age.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, a lot of slugs.
No, really?
No, come on. Come on. Oh, wait. This is...
I will tell you this.
It's not a good way to get information.
I grew out of it. But wait, this is the point,
wait a minute.
Too.
I thought you meant that you were hurting slugs in the practice of science.
No.
You're talking about as a child.
As a child.
You
as
hurt
a
small
child.
Things.
As a child. And I mean, this is the other thing about bugs.
Is
they
your
are...
last name Lecter?
No.
Okay.
It's interesting. You don't want to reveal your last name.
Good to know when to quit. We don't know. That's why we're still doing the show 3,002 episodes later.
Part of it is that we categorize insects differently because we are, in a way... okay with killing insects, although we're not okay with killing other animals. You wouldn't kill a cow, in other words.
I would not.
No.
But I would use a cow to kill a fly. I would pick it up and slam it on a fly.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is part of the perception. I mean, this is part of our categorization. So on a lot of the Q&As on the products that are insect-based, mostly cricket here in the United States,
mm-hmm,
because we're comfortable with them. But we don't want them in our house. So
I've had fried crickets.
Yeah. And
how were they?
They were good. They tasted like grasshoppers, like pumpkin seeds.
I wouldn't have any problem with it as far as the taste or the texture of it. Probably, I would like it is what it is. I will tell you that this intrusive animal empathy that I've been having is intense to where I'll be jogging and I will be hopscotching around. Like if it's rained, any small life form that has washed out onto the trail. And now I find out that I just could have been smashing them willy-nilly and they would have had no idea.
And eating them.
Thanks to Dr. Lecter.
They're mostly begging you to smush them. Yeah,
exactly.
So you're not willing to do a taste test?
You have a bug with you?
Yes.
Okay, bring it up here. You just carry insects around?
Yeah.
I came from my office. I have a supply.
Wait, these are lab insects?
Sure.
No. These are packaged. These are...
Okay, can you bring them up here?
What is your name again, first name?
My name is Emily.
Emily, last name redacted, tortured slugs as a child, got on a train from Philadelphia with bugs in her purse.
Because I missed my bus.
To make us eat these bugs.
Okay,
yes. Go grab the bugs if you can, and we'll try.
Oh, no, you know what? Looks like we're out of time. I'll just swell up the music. Sorry, everybody. Thank you all for coming out.
Emily, you have 9 minutes.
Yeah.
I'll hold this. Okay.
John Hodgman, audio engineer, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
What can't he do?
There are two forms. There are whole crickets. This particular
The meal
one...
takes two forms.
Choose the form.
These are whole roasted.
Okay. Whole roasted crickets?
Crickets.
Yeah.
They're crispy taco flavored. Okay.
Crispy taco flavored.
This is a protein bar, cricket protein bar.
Ooh, sure. That seems like the deep end of the pool.
And, this and is made with cricket flour.
Sure.
So oh, you see okay. these.
Is that low carb?
You don't see that.
Yeah, what's the carb situation?
What's the carb load here?
Yeah.
Is there any chance somebody could... What are you drinking, their Diet Coke?
I want to help the planet by eating a sustainable protein, but I don't want to blow my keto. You know what I
yeah.
mean?
So...
I mean, everything in balance. That's what nature is, right?
Sure.
There's 24 grams of carbs.
Oh, get away from
I'll
me, Satan.
This is dietary fiber. It's 6 grams. That's 21%.
24 grams of carbs, okay. dietary fiber,
this is
500
somehow,
grams.
I didn't know this could go into a more esoteric place, but it actually has. Will you hand us the bugs
yes.
and
yeah,
we'll eat them?
Give us the real bugs.
And somebody get Luke something to wash it down with. You're out of beverage, and I feel like that's important.
Oh, okay, I'm pouring... Okay, I'm pouring out some of the whole... Hodgman, are you going to try some of this?
Yeah, I've already had them before.
I know, but maybe you didn't like it and you don't want to do it again.
No.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, they were good.
Okay, Andrew, are you going to try this?
For you.
The argument is that insect protein is a much more sustainable protein
yes.
and planet-healthy protein.
That,
okay.
that is the case.
They're
it's
small.
More sustainable.
Okay, here we go.
If you want this bar.
How many are you going to have?
I don't know, 10 or something?
They are rather...
Whole roasted bread. Crickets, crispy taco...
Yeah,
I would eat these.
A delight.
Yeah, they're good. But I mean, like, this tastes like a sunflower seed to me, which
exactly.
I feel like are also in easy supply, right? Is there something like eating a sunflower seed versus eating this cricket? Is one arguably better for the earth?
What of the two? Well, that has the more protein.
Okay.
Well, and also,
that,
I presume that, you know, sunflower seeds are cultivated and it's commercial agriculture that is maybe using resources less than a bunch of crickets that you find roaming around a forest. They're wild.
These are not wild crickets.
Well, then forget what I just said.
They're not cage-free crickets? Fuck this.
Oh my
I would never eat that. Thank you very much, Dr. Emily.
We'll try
the protein bar after the show.
I ate one. Yeah, I'm
good job, Andrew. I'm very proud of
you.
Andrew is a...
There's no cheese on them, so that's fine.
I know, I love it. You would eat like a raw banana slug as long as it didn't have
right.
cheese on it.
I would eat a banana slug before a banana, oddly enough. That's a true story.
Okay. And we've got to get out of here. We're oh, my gosh.
Pass them around. They're good.
Hodgman just tossed the crickets into the audience. This is like the worst Def Leppard show of all time. All right. I think that's it.
They're sustainably raised in Austin, of course.
Hey, one more time for our friend John Hodgman. His new book is Medallion Status.
Thank you very much. Congratulations, Andrew and Luke, on the 3,000th episode.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for coming by. Thank you all for being here and being part of TBTL. We really do appreciate it. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. Until then, have a great Thursday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
Power out.